Dumba.
Oops, I didn't start from the beginning. Please excuse me.
Deje jeoba da jeoba yandaba zobe sanje riba da jabzo demba dewaraje jigden gemba jebo deve kalo jowa sana meba hada tumba sanje jomden de be jawa shaja tobala ja Chudu jazu jeo dumba jumden den dejen jeba ta jumba yandaba zobe Rigba da jazu denba devara jemba jigden jemba jebo Kalo jowa lana meba lada menam je dumba sanje Beja wa jaja duba la janze lo chudu jazu jeo Dijin jeba da jomba yandaba zombe sanje rigba da shabzo denba dewa Jigden jemba jebo ndube kalo juwa lana meba lada minam je tumba sanje Shaja duba la janze lo chudo jabzo jeho Chidun jambe yala chadze lo Kange lo tu timni tende nyenda namda rabze Chini dungun chichi seze nyeje doba lewaman Ganda sibe tsura mare mendo dunye gize Chonzo kwen la puji taze yen la chuchu yang. Chukdara chi chu nye mo nye lo le ye cha chu chu zi chi. Mare men dun du nye nye gu chi nye chun zi re chi. Tene ta ji sa chu ta zun yun dun lun zo kya zi tu. Chudra chudra chuni kende talu mes jambe yanglan Omo arabaza na di Omo arabaza na Omo arabaza na di Omo arabaza na di 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 Kada denju shong lo loba yi lo zhi bo be zhe do zhu Penje zhu zhe me do tama zhe ra lin zhe nyen de kien ba de Sanje shing lak ni de lo wa yi zhu gwe nam da zhe ba shoy Tamba ke nama je chugu kala kenze tenje ne Che dara tsame tuje zema Sabje chunje chaba do su Mendala gana ya daya me Je chudha so je chona la chanjo bando tane jamso je Thāgī chūshī jībē sōnam āñjī dhōlā pīn sāñjī dhōbārā shūy Tsūjī jōnā lā chāñjū pādō tāni jāsū chī Thāgī chūshī jībē sōnam āñjī dhōlā pīn jī sāñjī dhōbārā shūy Chudan zonje jona la chanjo bado dani jamzo je tagi chuse jebe zona dola Dabajo la 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 me me da me anje umbo da anje jen la zo chu je chola cha won che ba na sanje zo ba ra do shi jen de we ju ju ba de da che je da be chu ne che ne de she she na mo la ye je da lu da ne jen je ru bon de da me ye je nam da do wa kun je chan na che sa ma tam je ke do ta ge chu de do Good morning. So we will do our ritual. So just to explain to newcomers, we have today we have 5 newcomers. So welcome to Kajuling. Normally what we do is at the beginning of every session, we share our insights, whatever we have discussed in the previous week. So we try to apply. We try to integrate that in our life, daily life. And then we come here and then share. Or from last week's talk, I have applied this and this. This happened to me and I was able to implement this method, this technique. So that's we begin. That's how we begin our sessions with. So that the whole idea is that through your own experience, you have gained insight. So if you are able to share it with others, then others may also gain insight. So that's the whole purpose. So that's what we do every session. So please, anybody, welcome to share. Anyone? Yes, Jean, please.
I'm sharing a very personal kind of thing. I've had my little granddaughter with me for the last 30 hours. And it was kind of like I wanted to practice this with her, what I have learned.
Mm-hmm.
And teaching a little 20-month-old to be helpful and to be of service to others, and you see their joy that comes from it. And you know that the lesson is so powerful how we bring up our children. And very often I think that with parents get too busy. And I have the benefit of being a grandmother and having the patience and the time. And this morning again, I made a smoothie for her and she thought it was so good. And she was standing by the sink drinking it. And first she spilled the smoothie. And I said, oops. And then she smelled the whole container. And it was kind of like my thinking of this was so helpful in terms of her response to what had happened. That it wasn't, we can fix it. We can fix it immediately rather than, you know, going through, you know, I'm mad or upset. It was, your teachings carried with me through a very personal experience.
Okay, great. Thank you. Anyone?
I don't want to share the details, I don't think, but I've had some days this week where there were some things that were very distracting to my mind and to my thoughts. And they didn't want to go away. They were just there, and they just were occupying all my thoughts. And so I really made an effort, especially after last week's teaching, to just accept the fact that they were there and that's what happens when thoughts arise. They come up and they pass away. And to try to continue occupy my mind with the things that I needed to occupy it with and recognize that these disturbing things would come up as well. So that was a very good lesson for me for this past week.
Great.
My experience this week was somewhat of a discouragement about, you know, what we, you know, the bodhicitta and promises and so forth, because it's just difficult sometimes. And so my experience this week is that, you know, we can't take for granted this teaching. We have to keep immersing ourselves in it. And it's like, I was reading from Thich Nhat Hanh also. He said that we have to renew our joy. It says, you know, happiness is impermanent as well. So that made me come back more often to my meditation room, because this is, you know, and what I do there, and it's this is the source. This is what I get sustenance from, you know, to keep going. But we can't take it for granted.
Yep.
You know, we have to keep immersing ourselves. This is where we renew it, and we, you know, because out there in the world, it, you know, there's a lot of difficulties.
Yeah, just to add on Jean's point, you know, to how to teach our children all these virtue to be, how to be a good person. The best way is to set an example. So there, in psychology, there is this famous experiment called Bandura's Bobadol experiment. This is called the social learning theory. How people learn from others' examples. So what this experiment involved was, so they had this group of two groups of kids, and then they put one group in one room where there is a glass they could see, and in that room there was this guy who was playing with those Boba doll. You know, the spongy one, if you hit it, it will bounce back. Yeah, so he was, the one person was playing there, and the children are watching him play. So in one condition, so this guy was playing very roughly, hitting this and kicking and all that. So that group of children watched that guy act violently towards that Boba doll. And then there is another room where another group of children watch another person, but Boba doll, but this time, unlike the other one, but this one, what do you call it, treating the doll very gently, nicely, affectionately, and all that. So when they, at the end, when they let the kids play with the Boba doll, so it was so obvious that those who are in that violent condition, they tend to act violently towards the Boba doll. Whereas those who were in that peaceful condition, they tend to act or behave gently and peacefully towards the Boba doll. So the conclusion from this is that we learn from others' behavior. So it is very important to set very good example. So let's say if you are in a family, and if you are husband and wife, if you are fighting all the time, quarreling all the time, what are you sending the message to? And then if you, let's say if you are with a kid and if you keep telling lies, you know, you think that the children is just there and you just keep telling lies and all doing all kind of dishonest things. And the children will learn that, oh, it is okay to do all this because my mother does it, my father does it. So that's why the most powerful teaching is through setting good example. That's the way, just to add on to yours. Yeah. And then coming back to Jocelyn's one, yes, it is not easy. So we have already discussed every time that, you know, Dharma practice and the consequence or the results from Dharma practice are not instant, even though we live in instant culture. Everything, yeah, we wanted instant results, but unfortunately or sadly, that's not the case with the Dharma practice. You have to put effort. You have to be consistent with your practice. So if you do one day and if you don't do the next day, no, we talk about meditation as bodybuilding. You go to the gym. If you want to build muscle, you have to persevere every on daily basis. If you go for 1 week and then if you stop for another 2 weeks, you cannot expect to gain whatever muscle you are hoping to gain. So that's why we really need to put effort. So that is actually related to today's topic. Today's topic is about the process of death and dying. It is very important to know all these stages, what we go through when the time comes. Because the whole idea is that if we are able to understand all these various stages, then we will grab, we will use that to our benefit. When that stage where our subtlest mind or consciousness arrives, when we are able to harness that, if we are able to employ that to our benefit, that's where we will be able to cultivate great benefit. But in order to do that, we need to know when does this stage arrives. So that's one thing. But then, of course, we will discuss later. But the important thing is, if you don't do any practice, and if you just hope that, oh, by learning these stages, and then, yeah, I will be able to do it. No. Because there's no habit. We are habituated in the other way. We are not habituated to have this virtuous mind. So at the time of death, there's a lot of anxiety, a lot of fear, a lot of confusion. So how can you expect to have a good frame of mind? It is very difficult. But if you are habituated in that kind of mental frame, then of course it comes automatically. No matter whatever situation you are in, you are able to be in that situation. So that is why it is very important to really practice on a daily basis. So my godmother was telling me that was years ago, and she was almost in an accident. And she was driving in the car, and then that there was a van driving directly towards her. Obviously, that guy was drunk. And she knew that, oh, she couldn't turn this way, there's something else. She couldn't, so there's no way. So she was when it says that at that moment, she couldn't even, remember to think about her guru or even Om Mani Padme or anything. Because she said she's just finished Mani retreat. She has chanted Mani 100,000 times, but still. So that shows that this chanting didn't really go inside. It was simply a recitation. So imagine you just finish a retreat, and then at that time, if you couldn't, this mantra, even you don't remember, if this doesn't even come about, so no need to say those we don't do at all. So that is why, of course, this is very important to know these stages, of dissolution, actually stages of dying. But more importantly, to really practice. So that's why we discussed in our earlier weeks how to propel us, how to motivate us, how to drive us towards practicing. So that's where we have discussed about different methods. First is the contemplating on the precious life we have and how important and how valuable, how invaluable our birth is if we really think deeply. But we take it for granted. We don't realize until at the end, then we realize. Then it's too late. There's a lot of regrets. Oh, I should have done that. I could have done that. That's too late. You are already dying now. But now is the time. You have, in terms of physical ability, you can do it. You are not too old. In terms of facility, you have all the facility. You have Dharma centers everywhere. You have teachers everywhere. So what is your excuse? So we don't really have any excuse other than being engrossed, being occupied with the worldly concerns, with the worldly things, pursuing material gain. So that's one way to motivate us to use our time to practice Dharma. The other one is the one we discussed last week, is about contemplating on the impermanence of death. How, despite, you know, healthy body, young age, all that, death can come any minute. We are sitting here today, we don't know our fate. Tomorrow's fate. We may not wake up tomorrow morning. And then at the time of death, we also know that nothing helps except our Dharma practice. Wealth, friend, prosperity, status, fame, name, nothing helps except your Dharma practice. So this we need to continue reflecting on it, keep reminding us of this, so that that will enable us to do practice more. So that's what we discussed earlier. So earlier weeks. So today we are going to talk about the process of dying. So normally, yeah, we say, somebody died. I saw the person die. But we don't really know what stages the person is going through. So normally, conventionally, when person stops breathing, we assume that person is dead. But from the Buddhist point of view, the person is not dead yet. Still undergoing, still in the process of dying. So that's what we are going to discuss. So here So that one is mainly for you to take home, so that you know. Yeah, you can just pass it over. Yeah, keep one and then yeah. So have you heard about Tibetan Lama remaining in clear light meditation? So it is so common. I was trying to look for article, trying to look for any news article. But of course this only happens in monastery and all those areas, so these don't get reported. But this former Gandhi Rinpoche, that's my teacher as well. So when Rinpoche passed away, he remained in clear light meditation for 18 days. And they sent a team of medical team to investigate what is happening there. But they did, but we haven't seen the report. But Rinpoche remained in meditation after death. Yeah, remained 18 days. And then this is the actual picture, Tengah Rinpoche. That's all I could find. So this is actually in the meditation. The person is dead. What you call the clinical death has already happened. But you can see the face, the luster of the face, and everything as if the person is alive. So if you are able, if you practice, so that's what you will be able to do. Even after, you know, you are announced dead. And my own teacher, so I have heard a lot about lamas remain in meditative state. But I haven't seen before. When my teacher, Gungpa Rinpoche, when Rinpoche passed away in hospital, and I was with Rinpoche. Rinpoche passed away of Parkinson's disease. So we brought Rinpoche to hospital, but Rinpoche passed away. And I think those who have been to monastery, you know the distance from the nearby city, that's Hubli. So from there to monastery, it's over an hour's journey. So we had no choice but to bring Rinpoche's body back. But despite all that disruption, but Rinpoche remained in meditation for 6 or 7 days. So at the end of the day, I mean, at the end of the meditation stage, that was on the seventh day, before the cremation, we had to bathe the body, and I was there bathing. And if you look from the back, it is like the person is still alive. There is no change. Over here in the West, in the Western culture or Western society or other places, when a person dies, they call those people and they will inject so that rigor mortis doesn't happen. But over there, we don't do that. We just maintain the body as it is. And that was during the hottest season of the year. And actually, for ordinary people, it would have been rotten in 2 days. But even at the seventh day, when we bathed the body, it was like, only thing is that the head cannot support. We need to hold the head. But everything, the luster of the body, everything is as if still alive. So it's like, did you really come out of the meditation? That's my concern. But of course, they said it's already out of the meditation. Yeah, so these are the stories. And that really, really kind of, increase my conviction and faith. So that shows that if you really practice, these are possible. These are not something elusive. If you really practice, you can see the result. So that is very comforting. And that is very encouraging as well. And then there are, in relation to that, I also found some other stories. This is Lama Kama Rinpoche. And his body shrank to 20 centimeters. And this is the big guy here. And in 7 days, the body has shrunk to 20 cm. This is what they call rainbow body. I haven't seen that. And there was another, these are not rare, it looks like something common. And she is a mother of Rinpoche. And when she passed away, her body next to her shrank to 40 centimeters, they say. So these happens when you are able to harness your subtlest consciousness. So when we are alive, we are unable to harness that. We are unable to use that subtle consciousness. So if you're able to use the subtle consciousness, it is said to be very powerful, very effective, especially if you use that to perceive or meditate on emptiness. That's where you are able to do that. Even if you do for 1 day, it is like doing for years. So that's why those practitioners who are unable to really gain the realization, they always look for these opportunities at the time of death. So this subtle consciousness only comes about certain times or certain events. So one is normally at the time of death. That's when this comes about. And then the other things were in the, the dream, when you are having a deep sleep. And that's also possible. And then fainting, and then orgasm. So these are the four events that the subtle consciousness arises. But these, we are not able to do it. Like fainting, you won't be able to use that. And then dream, of course, not possible, unless you are a real practitioner. So there are 8 stages we go through when we started dying. So these are called the dissolution. So when we say dissolution of earth, it is, even though we say that the element of earth dissolves into the element of water, but it is not really literal. It is not that earth dissolves into water. It is just that the power of earth to support the consciousness kind of diminishes. And then that the power of the water to support the consciousness becomes prominent. That's why we call it the water element dissolves into, earth element dissolves into water element. So these are, so you don't need to write, I think it's in there, the note that I gave you, it's in there. And we will cover one by one, so you will have plenty of time to write. So first, what happens is, so I don't want to, I am not going into detail, but just roughly, just briefly. So when the death occurs, what happens is what is called the 25 gross objects. So all these kind of dissolves, disintegrates. So these are the five aggregates, four elements, six sources of perceptions, five objects, and then the five basic wisdoms. And then, yeah, the five aggregates, most of you are familiar with this. So we have form, feeling, perception, or some say discrimination, and then mental formation, and then consciousness. So the form, of course, is the physical, the objects that we see. And then the feeling, you have this pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. And then perception is the one that helps us to identify, recognize what that is. If you are looking at the shape, it's a red color when you see that. So we see that that is the red shape or red color. So that is the function of perception or the discrimination, the aggregate. And then mental formation, and then consciousness. So we say that duji pungbu shile shen. So other than these four, form, feeling, perception, and consciousness, then all that falls under the aggregate of mental formation. So it could be our thoughts, mental imprints, all this comes under mental formation. So with that as a foundation, so now we are going into the actual stages. The first stages is called what is called dissolution of earth element. So at that time, there are these various factors dissolves at the same time. Simultaneously, all these other things also dissolve, or it kind of disintegrates, it kind of diminishes its power. So when the earth dissolves into the water element, at the same time, form aggregates also dissolves. At the same time, eye senses, and then likewise, the object of eye sense, whatever, all this physical color, shape, all this, I put it as sight, all that also dissolves. And then, yeah, this wisdom, basic mirror wisdom. So there are external signs and internal signs. So to how we can tell that the person is going through that particular stage is that we can tell from external signs and internal signs. So the external sign is that the body becomes thin. We know the people when they are dying, yeah, they lose their strength and of course, loses weight, becomes thin, cannot move. And then because of the eye senses, dissolution of eye senses, what happens is the person cannot close or open the eyes. And we see in the movies that, you know, people die with eyes and then people just close the eyes because the person cannot move. The movement, the ability to move the eyes is no longer there. And then, yeah, the body, you can tell that it kind of diminishes. There isn't that radiant appearance or look. And then you won't be able to see clearly. That's the first stage. That's the external sign. And then what happens is many people have this feeling of sinking. I think those who have, looked after, took those who took care of your elder or whoever. So you will notice that some people at the time of dying, they will say, oh, pull me up, pull me up. I'm sinking. Put something underneath. Because they have this feeling that they are sinking. Actually, it's not. But they have this kind of a sense that they are sinking. Then what is the internal sign? So these are external signs that other people can see. But there are also signs that only that person will experience. So this is what is called the mirage. So when the person is going through the first stage, the internal sign is that person will have this appearance, this vision or this appearance of a mirage. So that's the first stage where the earth element dissolves into the water elements. Then this is followed by the second stage where at this stage the water element is dominant in supporting our consciousness. But now that also loses its strength. It diminishes its power to support our consciousness. So now what happens is the water element, fire element, is now becoming more prominent, more dominant. So at that time, what happens is these other like feeling aggregates dissolves, ear senses, sound, and then of course the wisdom. So at that time, like the first stage, you also have these external signs. So once you know all that liquid, the saliva, sweat, urine, blood, all this kind of reduces. So you can see there the dying person's mouth, everything dries. And then of course suddenly it feels hot because the fire element is becoming more dominant, more overwhelming, more prominent. So because of that you have this sense of feeling hot. And then your feeling is already, you don't send those gross level of feelings. And no longer of course you can subconsciously may hear, but normally the hearing kind of stops at this stage. And then body fluids. Fluids, yeah. So that's these are the external signs. At the same time, there are internal signs. And the person will experience that the person is in this smoke, a house filled with smoke. So when you, why we are going through this is, we will practice this, we will practice in our life and they say, oh, now I am going through this, oh, I see this smoke field, so now I'm in that stage. So that is for us to know. So the person goes through that. At that stage, the person have this appearance of smoke. Let's say if we burn incense, so you will see the smoke. So that kind of vision the person will have or person will experience. So that's the second stage. And now comes the dissolution of fire elements. So when the fire element dissolves, what happens is, of course, body's heat slowly seeps away. You will feel that person is now, the body is becoming cold. There's no longer heat there. And there are also, you can watch from where, which part of the body the heat starts to diminish. It is said that if the heat starts to decrease or diminishes from the top, then it is not a good sign, because then normally it says that if the person is going to be born in the lower realms, then normally the heat kind of started to, what do you call, what is the word now?
Dissipate.
Yeah, dissipate from the top, from the crown. And then some people, the heat dissipates from the feet. So that is a good sign. Of course, it's not 100% sure, But these are signs that one can look out. At that time, because the, now the wind element is becoming more prominent, is because the fire element has dissolved into wind, the wind is becoming more prominent, what happens, you will start to feel difficulty in breathing. So the internal sign, the person will, what person will feel or experience the internal, internally the person will have this kind of vision where you see, what do you call those, the fireflies or the sparks. So in Geshe Zobo's book it says, sparks sent up into space by wood crackling in a fire. So when you crackle the fire, you know, then all these sparks. So that kind of vision the person will experience. And then finally comes the wind element, dissolves into what is called mind or consciousness. So that's when the breathing stops. And this is where clinically the person is dead, clinical death. So the doctor would come and announce the person is dead, but still has four more stages to go from the Buddhist point of view. So at that time, no physical activities, because we know the person is dead, cannot move. And then, yeah, tongue becomes thick and short. These are all corresponding to the dissolution. So when the tongue senses dissolves, then tongue becomes thick and short and becomes, what do you call, the ability of the tongue loses. That is the tasting ability. And then the internal sign. It says unflickering candle, but of course I couldn't find. This candle looks like flickering candle, isn't it? Yeah. So it is like you have a you have this appearance that, you know, there is a light, a weak candle light. Fill the room filled with weak candle light. That kind of appearance you will experience or go through that experience. So when that happens, you are supposed to remind yourself, okay, now I am in that stage where the wind element dissolves into consciousness. So this is the first part. So up to here, until now, all that has dissolved is kind of physical things. The elements, all the aggregates, all these are physical things. Now that second part of the dissolution is the consciousness. So the consciousness, first is the gross level of consciousness, so a consciousness becomes subtler and subtler and subtler. So when the consciousness becomes subtler and subtler, then yeah, there isn't any external signs, but you will go through experiencing some internal signs. So in order to explain that, first we need to understand this, the wind channel and chakras. So there are so many channels. It says actually 72,000 channels. I don't know what these are. But we need to know the three main channels. So the central channel. So central channel starts from here, it comes here and then goes, follows the spine until our rear end. And then in parallel to this central channel, there are other two channels, what is called the right channel and the left channel. And these, the two, the what do you call, the accompanying channels, the parallel channels, and they kind of create, kind of joins at a specific location, joins at the central channel, and that kind of creates a knot. So it kind of curls onto the central channel, so at specific location, so the crown and then the throat. There are the chakras, there are different chakras, number of chakras. We are just focusing on four. So we have the crown, and then throat, and then heart, and then we have navel. So four of these channels. So at each location, each place, so these that the two channels kind of coils around and creates a knot. And that's where we call this chakra. So because it kind of creates the knot there, so that the wind does not pass through the central channel. So that's when the meditators, the yogis, when they practice the tantra, especially the what you call the completion stage, the dzogrim. So that's where they are trying to enable the wind to pass through the central channel. So for ordinary people, it only happens when at the time of death. So in normal life, it doesn't. In our when we are alive, it is not possible for ordinary people. So what happens is, now that all your this physical forms or all these elements have dissolved, now your mind is, all these winds are kind of dissolving into subtler winds. And what happens is, when there's something called indestructible drop. So when we were, I won't say born, when we conceive, yeah, when conception happens, what happens is we get the drop, white drop and red drop. White drop, which is the essence of the father's semen, and then the red drop, which is the essence of mother's egg or the blood. So these two combines together, comes together, and it forms this kind of a, some says a pea shape, but it's the size of a mustard seed. It's so tiny, and top part is the father's the white drop, so it's white in color, and then the bottom part is the red in color. So they kind of forms together, and then inside our consciousness resides. This is where the clear light resides, this subtlest mind. So our consciousness enters in there and kind of mounts on that subtle wind. So this one never gets activated. It remains dormant throughout our life. Only at the time of death, when the consciousness leaves, this opens and consciousness leaves. So what happens when all this dissolution started to occur? When we are conceived, one part of the white drop goes to our crown chakra and it resides there. And then another part goes to our navel or the secret, I think the navel there. It remains there. So when this dissolution started to occur, what happens is the white drop started to descend and that red one started to ascend. So when this happens, you have this vivid white sky mind. So this is one of the stage. So there's no external signs, but just that the person will experience this appearance. Normally it says that a clear sky filled with moonlight. But it's that moonlight is not shining in it. It's just that it is, the house is filled with the light. It's just something white. So you will have this experience. So that is because it is because of the descending of the white drop. So when it started to descend, you have this, the white light, this vivid white sky mind. So that's the already one stage.
So how does our mind distinguish that from the light at the time of the fourth stage, the dissolution of the
mm-hmm.
The wind energy there.
Yeah. So once you after we breath our last, whatever that can, when our breathing stops, so we go, we will have this stage where you will feel that everything is white. We have this vivid white sky mind.
So how is that different from what you see at the fourth stage?
At the fourth stage, you won't have this vision at all.
So what is the vision at the fourth stage?
Fourth stage is
the candle.
Candle. Its candle is more of a, I think it's more, not really white. It's like a candle, it's candle kind of candlelight. If you have an empty room there, if you lit a candle there, so you will have that kind of vision there. But then that will progress into this one. So here everything is, it's kind of empty thing, but it's just that feeling there. Just that vision, that appearance there, yeah.
Can I ask you a question,
Chris? Sure.
Channels, do they follow the central channel, as you described?
Yeah, they follow the central channel, yeah. It's parallel, it's running parallel, yeah. And then what happened is, remember, the white drop is descending, and then the red drop is ascending. So because of that, after that, you will have this vivid red or the orange sky mind. Everything is reddish. So it is said a clear sky filled with sunlight. This is also same. That it's not the sun is, you know, you are receiving the sunlight, but just that it is kind of empty but filled with that kind of sunlight there. It's a kind of reddish or orange. You will experience that. So when you practice, the purpose is when you practice this, all this, so okay, now you have to imagine, oh, now I'm going through this, oh, I see this one, that happens. So when you familiarize yourself in this, when the actual thing happens, then you will be able to identify, oh, yeah, this is happening, now this is happening. And Geshe Lama Kunjo, when he was passing, so this his attendant, Geshe Dinzu Soba, he was telling us that, I mean, he's saying that, of course, he didn't say about these, but he says that when the first stage where the mirage happened, so Geshe-la was saying that, okay, so they were all, you know, very worried there. Geshe-la said that, no, I won't die that soon. I'm now experiencing the mirage. So practitioners do that. And everybody actually goes through these four stages. But because we don't know, first of all, most of people don't know about these stages. And even if we know, we don't really practice. So when this happens, yeah, we are unable to recognize these stages. And then because we don't recognize, what happens is it kind of generates fear. There's a lot of confusion. You don't know what is happening. So if you practice this, and then yeah, you're able to oh, no, I'm going through this, I'm going through this, I'm going through this.
I just wanted to mention with Geshe Lama Kontrok, at Kopan Monastery, after when Rinpoche was in the process of passing, they actually video taped. So at Kopan, at least I saw, I don't know if it's available now, they had a video over a number of days, and they took sections of it, and you could see, I think it was like for 11 days that his body
wasn't really changing. I was searching for some clips to show you, but I couldn't.
Yeah, I don't know if it's publicly available, but I know when I was at Kopan.
Okay. Okay, so it's 11 o'clock, and that is one of our tradition here, that we stop at 11 for 10 minutes to have tea, and then we get back. So please.
I have a question. Does the indestructible drop reside at your heart chakra?
Sorry?
Does the indestructible drop...
Yes, in the heart chakra. Yes, in the heart chakra, yes.
Oh, I thought it was at the navel.
No. Indestructible drop. That resides in the heart chakra. But you have the white drop, and then the red drop. No, it's not navel. It's here. Indestructible. So it is indestructible because it cannot be destroyed until death comes. Please, enjoy tea. I just realized that we have only one slide left. We could have just finished that, and, you know, before the break. Where is Chuck today?
We have a sick dog.
Oh.
So we are taking turns caring for him.
I see.
He can't be left alone, so every 2 hours.
Okay, so where were we? So we talk about this vivid red. So now what happens is, you know, remember at the vivid stage, the white drop is descending, and then the red drop is ascending. So what happened is, they started to ascend, and then you have this indestructible drop. First, I forgot to explain this. So what happens when all this wind started to dissolve, these two side channels, they get kind of deflated. When these get deflated, it loosens the central channel. That's when the wind started to pass through. So that's the reason. And the practitioners, what they are trying to do is, they are trying to do the same thing. They're trying to loosen this, loosen the knot, so that they will be there. They can kind of let the wind pass through the central. So you see, you have the two.
The
I should have, yeah, parallel channels. Parallel channels get deflected because all that wind is now dissolving. Because they get deflected, so whatever that is creating that knot also get loosens. That's when the wind started to pass through the central channel. So now what happened is, so this is ascending, one is ascending, one is descending, and then they kind of meet at the indestructible drop where the consciousness resides. So you already have this, remember the pinkish one? The top is white and then the red at the bottom. So these two kind of meets here. When they meet here, then what happens? Blackout. Kind of faints, you know, when we faint, so there's a blackout. So that's what happens at this stage. You have this vivid black sky mind. It says the moonless dark sky just after dusk. So all this analogy and metaphor, they use the autumn sky. So autumn sky is said to be clear of clouds. So in the moonless dark, it is like just dark. It is at the dusk, but the moon has not risen. So you have this complete kind of blackout. Yeah, you have that kind of appearance, that kind of vision. So that's what happens when these two sandwiches, all these riches and sandwiches, that indestructible drop. And then that won't be that long. The blackout will be quick. And then because it touches that, and then kind of the activates the consciousness which is residing, that subtlest clay light mind, which is inside residing in that indestructible, we call it Mishipetili, in that indestructible drop. So that's where, and then you have this clay light stage. Because now this consciousness was activated. You have, after blackout, you have this thing. But the consciousness hasn't left yet. It is just there. Soon after that blackout, then you have this, what is called the sky's natural state at dawn. So something empty, there's nothing there, empty, but what do you call? It's kind of a white. You have that kind of appearance, that vision. That's the clear light mind. So that's where we are supposed to. That is the subtlest mental state. So if you are able to use that towards meditating on emptiness, that becomes so powerful. This is the state where all these practitioners that we saw, we call Tibetan, we call it Thukdam Shu. So it's actually in the clear light meditation. So they use this clear light mind to meditate. And then, yeah, it all depends on their resolve. Some lamas, they resolve, before dying, they resolve to remain in this meditative state for 1 week, others maybe 10 weeks, not 10 weeks, I'm saying 22 days, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Yeah. So the question of, you know, what happens if we have to move the body? So the Tibetan practice is that we don't move, we don't even touch the body when the person dies. We try not to touch or move the body for at least 3 days, because it is said that consciousness does not leave immediately. In some cases, it may reside there for 2 to 3 days. But of course, after 3 days, definitely the consciousness would leave for ordinary people. But of course, the yogis, they can remain longer than that. But here the practice is, if you die in hospital, you have no choice. You cannot tell them, you cannot move this, you know. You have to move. So that's not a good practice. So that's why what we do is, in such situation, so we try to touch the body first on the top part of the body. Normally we use a statue, like a Buddha's holy statue, and place it on the crown. The reason is that then there is a likelihood that the consciousness will leave from your crown, which kind of suggests that you will born in the upper realms. So that's important. So when you are looking after any, you know, old people, dying people, yeah, try not to move. If you have to move, then yeah, use a holy object and place it on the crown. So that kind of triggers the consciousness to leave the body. Then, of course, it's just a corpse. So that's the 8 stages. So now that we know the stages, so we have to meditate on this. We have to prepare ourselves when the actual time comes. His Holiness says that His Holiness does this practice 5 to 6 times on daily basis. So if His Holiness needs to do 5 to 6 times, then imagine how many times we need to do. Yeah. But of course, as I mentioned earlier, this is one way. But it is very important how you live your normal days, your daily lives. That has a big impact. That has a big influence on how you die. If you live your life unethically, all the time engaging in non-virtuous actions, and then if you expect to die peacefully and utilize these stages, it is not possible. It is unlikely. Because you are not habituated in that way. So that's why the mindset at the time of death is very, very important. So Tibetan practice is that when somebody is dying, we will not allow any close relatives to be with the person. We will not allow relatives to cry in front of the dying person. So there was this story that one of the APMT members, so she approached Lama Sopa Rinpoche and said, somebody died, you know, when the dying there, or we brought our pet, his or her favorite pet, and let the person hold, and he or she died holding the pet. So Rinpoche's response is, I hope he or this person was not attached to the animal. So that's very dangerous. So at the time of death, we want to create the person's mind frame as virtuous as possible. So that's why you see the independent families, they will invite lamas to do prayers with the hope that, you know, when the person hears the prayers, somehow they will have this, the virtuous mindset. We have karmas created in our past life. We have lots of negative karmas. We have a lot of positive karmas. They are just waiting there to be picked up. So at the time of death, even let's say, even if you lived a very virtuous life, but at the time of death, if you die with anger, what happens is, even though yeah, you have cultivated a lot of virtuous karma, but it just picks the negative one because of your frame of mind at the time of death. So that is why it is very important to have a virtuous frame of mind. And that will not happen if you habituate yourself while you are alive. The importance of habituation, I think I mentioned. So if you continue doing that, then it becomes automatic. Let's say during special day, if you do a retreat, and then, you know, if you chant something, and then after that, anytime you come out and do something, it automatically comes. You have no intention to recite that, but because you are habituated, it automatically comes out. So that's what we wanted. We don't want to contrive to have virtuous mind. We want to have it, you know, automatically have that kind of a mindset. So all this, going through all this, is actually to live a better life, live a good life. Die well depends on living well. If you don't live well and if you expect to die well, that is really, really, you know, planting chili seeds and hoping for strawberries. That will never happen. That will never happen. Yeah. So my request is, please, while we have the time, try your best. And we have already discussed that, you know, in Buddhism, the best part is to practice Dharma, you don't have to go into caves. You don't have to go into monastery. You can go about doing your things, but you can still practice. It is all about taming our minds. It's all about watching our minds. It's all about spying on our minds, what our mind is doing. If our mind is thinking of negativities, going towards negativities, just pull back. If you are thinking of jealousy, anger, and all this, just notice that and say, no, I'm not going this way. So that's the practice. That's so easy in a way. And from the morning, yeah, if you go to work, you just kind of make this resolve that today I will try my best to be a good person, to be a helpful person, to be kind to others, not to be influenced by afflictive emotions, anger, jealousy, attachment, whatnot. And then throughout the day, if you keep reminding yourself about the result that you had made that morning, and then, yeah, your day will be good. Of course, first several days, you won't even remember to do that. But if you continue, there will come a day that, you know, it becomes your second nature. Then that's wonderful. You are able to work at the same time, but you are also able to practice. So that's the best thing. And then when the death comes, there's no regret. You can say that, yes, I tried my best. I have no regret. Then, as mentioned earlier, yeah, other people also, you know, those who you are leaving behind, they will be comforted. Oh, you know, that person is okay. He lived a very meaningful life. So you kind of give others the assurance that you will have a good rebirth. So that's very comforting for the others who you are leaving behind. So please, try your best to apply this and keep reminding yourself of the impermanence of death. That is the best motivator. When you think of this, oh, I may die tomorrow, suddenly you realize, wow, what would happen, you know? Am I prepared? No, I'm not prepared. I have nothing, actually, when the time comes. Yes, I have made a lot of money. Yes, I have a big bank balance. No, that won't happen. That won't help. So please. And then after today, yeah. Oh, any questions? After questions, we are going to do a prayer for Geshe Ajang. And I think many of you know him well. Has Geshe La taught here in the center?
He taught across the street. He was Gyalkar Rinpoche's attendant.
Yes, yes,
and
yes.
Associated with both centers.
Many
years.
Yeah.
So everybody here, everybody across the street.
Yeah, yeah. I know Geshe Ajang very well because we actually, my room is here and Gyalkar Rinpoche's house is just one next block. So if I go up to my rooftop and I could see directly into the window of Geshe Ajang's room. And Geshe Ajang, every day you will see that his fire is on. Geshe Ajang, he didn't use the gas and all that. It's all wood fire. And people, of course, jokingly call it, it's the eternal fire of Geshe Ajang. So fire never goes off. All the time you will see him cooking for Rinpoche, Gyalkar Rinpoche. So Geshe Ajang has really, I believe, that played a very important role in Gyalkar Rinpoche's life. Mm. He has been Rinpoche's attendant for many years. Yeah. Yes, yes. Once Rinpoche was recognized at a young age, since then, Geshe Ajang was the main attendant, and he really served Rinpoche all that. Yeah.
I have a question. Forgive me if you've already said that, but it is important, and I need to understand it. The drops, the red drops, the white drops, they come at the heart where the indestructible drop is, and when they do, that's when the clear light comes?
What happens is, so when the conception happens, at the time of conception, so we have these drops from father and mother, so it one part goes and then kind of resides in your heart chakra, and that's where we call it indestructible drops. And then additional to that, one part goes up here, the white one, the blood, the red part also goes down here. So it's there. So when the dissolution starts, all this started to, one is started to come down, other started to come up.
Right.
Yeah. And then they meet here.
Right.
And then, of course, when they meet together, that's where you have this blackout. That's the black.
Blackout.
Yeah. And then blackout won't last long.
Right.
Soon after that, that is already clear light. And then, the consciousness later, when the time to leave, so this consciousness leaves from that one. That kind of opens. Yeah.
Okay, so it will stay as long as the person is able
to. Is in meditation, yes.
Yes,
yes,
okay,
yes,
thank you.
Yes, yes, yes. Mm. Yeah, because when the wound moves, there is no mount for the consciousness. So our consciousness needs a mount to support, so that is the wind. Wind supports our consciousness. So when that subtle wind kind of opens up and leaves, so consciousness has no place. So it has to go out. It leaves.
So if when they stay in clear light, if it has no support.
Yeah, clear light. It is still there. The subtle mind is there. Subtle mind. Wherever there is mind, there has to be a mount. So there's a wind, the subtle wind to support the consciousness. And then once when the Lama is out of the clear light, then of course this leaves. Or we can say it the other way around. When the consciousness leaves, then the Lama is out of the meditation. Mm. So there are signs when the Lama is out, because what will happen is all this, they meet here, remember, this kind of sandwich, but it continues going up. The red one continues going up, the white one, white drop, continues going down, and then when consciousness leaves, so it comes out from the nose. So there's kind of a bleeding. So that's where you say, the consciousness has left. and then also they will have discharge. That's where you can tell that, oh, the Lama is out of the meditation. Hmm. Yes?
I feel stuck on when you say that the consciousness is residing
in... the subtle consciousness, the clear light. So it's clear light or subtle consciousness is same, actually.
Right, but yeah. I guess I'm just stuck on...
clear light mind.
The idea of it residing in a spot.
Mm. Yeah, so we have different levels of consciousness. So when we are alive, those gross level of consciousness. So consciousness is not just one. There are various consciousness at different levels of degree of, you know, gross and subtle. So what we are talking is resides here is the subtlest, the most subtle consciousness. That does not, that remain inactive, dormant until that time. Until when clear light, when the blackout happens, then it kind of gets activated. Because there's no other consciousness at all. So that is down to that subtle consciousness. Only then it becomes active.
So
the rest of the life...
Like, so not necessarily... I guess when I hear you say reside, I think of like this thing that's within a thing which seems not...
Yeah, that's what the text says. That's what text says. It just reside in this indestructible drop.
But isn't it everywhere?
No, no. The subtle consciousness is not everywhere. It is only activated at that time. So that's why we are trying to use that, because the opportunity is very rare. Yeah, think of consciousness as different.
And when you say activated, that makes more sense. Like but when the residing to me just sounds like it's this object within a body that doesn't...
Okay, I will use activate, okay?
is that more along what you mean, though, with the activated...
No, what I'm saying is actually that subtle consciousness, it just resides there. It is never activated. Only when blackout happens, because all that gross level of winds or the mind has already kind of dissolved. So there's no longer other mind. So only then this kind of comes about. So other than then, yeah, it is never active. So the practitioners, yogis, they try to activate this, you see, so that they can use this, put to good use. Still not great.
Thank you.
Any questions?
If it can only be activated at death, does that mean...
Sorry, could you repeat that?
Clear light mind can only be activated or...
Yes.
Yeah,
for ordinary people, yeah, only at the time of death. But yeah, yogis, of course. Yeah. Okay, so we will do the King of Prayers, which we will recite in English. We can try to recite slowly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and when we complete it, we'll say the concluding prayers.
Yes.
And Victoria, do you want to stay on the line with us, or do you want us to hang up the call?
Yeah.
This is pretty much the end of the lecture.
Yes.
It's pretty much the end. Okay, then I will click then.
All right. Then we will see you next Sunday.
Okay, thank you so much. I'm going to send you an email, okay? I'll send you an email. Thank you, Ken.
Okay.
Thank you, Rinpoche.
Thank you, bye.